The rain report for September 25, 2009 begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, with this week's rain report. This past June, David Corsi, N5FDL, EC, that's Emergency Coordinator, for San Joaquin County, California, received an email from Laura Smith, an FCC attorney charged with amateur radio enforcement. She was responding to a May 2009 blog post on David's website, n5fdl.com, in which David described a hypothetical event in which hams who are employed at a hospital participated in an on-air amateur radio emergency communications exercise, but as volunteers for a county government-sponsored group on their own time. This appeared to David to avoid the business communications prohibition. He was wrong. Laura Smith replied, in part, "A hospital drill that includes any amateur employees of the hospital is a violation of Section 97.113A3. It does not matter if the amateur is off-duty or on their lunch break. It does not matter if their job description does not include the so-called operation of amateur radio. It does not matter if they are not getting paid specifically for the drill. It does not matter if they sign a statement indicating that they are doing this strictly as a volunteer." Still quoting the FCC attorney Laura Smith here, "There is no loophole in the rule. If they are a hospital employee, they may not use the radio on behalf of their employer." What to do? David spoke with Rain's Hamp Holly, KC9RP, about the need for the commission to draw an exemption in 97.113A3 for emergency workers who happen to be hams.
What we are proposing is intended to be a very, very narrow exemption to FCC Rule 97.113A, which is the business communication prohibition in amateur radio. It is intended to solve a problem such as this one. I am a leader of my city's community emergency response team organization. It is sponsored by the fire department. Several firefighters are also amateur radio operators. We cannot talk about certain stuff on the radio, like, are you going to the meeting tonight, because of the business communication prohibition. Most people, until Dayton and thereafter, never imagined that this was what the FCC had in mind. At least most people involved in emergency communications. They didn't look at the government or their local hospital as being a business in the same sense that, say, Pizza Inn is a business. And we're very surprised to find out that doing emergency work, planning for real live, honest to gosh emergencies, was somehow, in any case, a prohibited business communication. And part of that is because if it's a real emergency, all of this is perfectly legal. So we are prohibiting something that in an emergency is absolutely legal. It is illegal in a non-emergency, which makes it difficult, impossible to train the way you are planning to perform when an emergency occurs. There are already a couple of exemptions in the FCC rules. The one closest to what we're looking at, and we're still working on the exact wording, is the school teacher exemption that allows a teacher in an educational institution to be paid while using amateur radio as a classroom activity. We're looking for a similar exemption for emergency workers who are members of organized emergency communications groups to be exempt while participating in the activities of that organization or communications related to it. The wording isn't exactly worked out, but that's how narrow we want it to be, so that if you're not a member of something, if you're not talking about the activities of which you're a member of, there is no exemption. There are already prohibitions against doing things like fire department dispatching on amateur radio because they can be done in other radio services. So we don't see the argument that this is somehow opening the door to the end of amateur radio as we know it as being particularly on target for this. We want a very, very narrow exemption. And I have in mind an even more narrow exemption that if the first proposal doesn't work, we can fall back to. I'm not ready to discuss that right now, but it would be an exemption that I think would be absolutely clear to everyone if that's what we ended up doing. I have been in contact on a several time a week basis with the FCC for several weeks now. They're aware of what we're up to. They are anxious to read the words that are going to solve all problems. That's a paraphrase from an FCC official, and we're anxious to give them to them. The FCC has been helpful getting sort of cryptic emails that don't really answer questions and having to send back, now, could you tell me yes or no? What we're talking about here. It's lawyers, and they're nice people, and they mean well, and they want good things for amateur radio. This isn't a personal issue. They look at the law as being very black and white. Many amateurs never saw it that way. I got an email from an FCC person who says, this has been settled for many years. You look at all the controversy that has been stirred up, and you realize it wasn't ever settled. And many radio amateurs did not understand what the business prohibition really meant, starting with the idea of what's a business. When I am asked what's a business, or when an average person is asked, tell me what a business is, the first thing they say isn't the local fire department or the local hospital. Somehow those organizations are looked at as being special because they are such vital community resources. We're not talking about helping people deliver pizzas using amateur radio. We're talking about your fire department, your doctors, your nurses, National Weather Service people, people who are already amateur radio operators who have chosen to serve the public as their life's work and are being told they can't use amateur radio to help with that work. I just think that's silly. I don't think that is what the FCC rules were intended to do.
Would this proposal apply to, let's say, employees of the National Weather Service who are hams, who might engage in conversation about non-emergency NWS activities?
Let me answer the question I think you're asking. First of all, the proposal does not actually exist. It's only going to be a sentence or two, and we have several people who are working on the best sentence or two that will accomplish what we want. But part of this is going to be that you're going to have to be involved in some sort of a recognized emergency communications organization to get the exemption. And that could involve anyone, theoretically, but the ones who are going to have a business communications problem as a result are going to be people like potentially Weather Service folks who, if they were, say, Aries Racy's members, and you're communicating in an Aries Racy's sort of circumstance, even though it's a non-emergency, they would get an exemption under the proposal that we're describing. An interesting thing about Skywarn, and I've had talks with several Skywarn groups, for them, again, it's legal if it's an emergency. An NWS forecaster who already has their ham radio license can, in an emergency, talk about tornadoes on amateur radio. The question then becomes, when does the emergency exist? Which is particularly important for Skywarn, which often gets involved long before a severe weather warning is issued. I think everybody would agree that at the point a tornado warning is issued, there is an emergency there. But if it takes a ham to get that warning issued in the first place, well, then when does the emergency start? It depends on how wide or narrow a view the FCC chooses to take. But I ask, is there a definition of emergency that we should be using? Well, no. Does the FCC have to declare an emergency for it to be an emergency? Well, no. So we're a little bit left on our own, and going back to the protection of life and property wording that is elsewhere in the FCC rules to determine when an emergency exists. Because when an emergency exists, 97.113A doesn't apply, and there's already FCC language using the example of firefighters that say that firefighters who are involved in disaster response are not covered by 97.113A.
It is unfortunate that the FCC has no written definition of the term emergency. I find that ironic in light of how much the FCC supports amateur radio in its emergency efforts.
Well, I asked the question, I got a response, and maybe there is, because you will find protection of life and property mentioned in the FCC rules in an emergency context. And I believe that is the definition. The question is how much danger to life and property must exist for it to be an emergency? That doesn't seem to be enumerated anywhere.
You're listening to a conversation David Corsi and 5FDL, the emergency coordinator for San Joaquin County, California, had with Rains Hapali, KC9RP, about the need for the FCC to slightly modify or amend Part 97.113A rules that govern emergency communications on amateur radio. We'll continue Hap's conversation with David in a moment. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network.
It would be a difficult thing to line out exactly what an emergency is. Most of us know an emergency when we see one, but I also have to tell you that most radio amateurs know prohibited business communication, the kind of business communication that really does damage amateur radio when they hear it. And for decades now, hams around the country have been violating 97.113A unknowingly, had no idea they were violating it, until Bill Cross starts speaking at Dayton and everything that has come out of that. I don't believe the FCC had any idea at all how commonly 97.113A was being violated by people in all sorts of circumstances. Near my home, a national laboratory that has an Ares group, they were being used for emergency communications drills within the closed campus of this national laboratory. They were employees. They were using amateur radio. Didn't hurt anybody. You know, they did this once or twice a year. And in an emergency, of course, it would be legal, but they're now not going to be doing those drills because of this new focus on 97.113A. A hospital canceling a simulated emergency test later this month, and I had to explain to them how they could do it by bringing in some volunteers and really focusing on non-employee hams in order to make their SET work. And some hams will say, well, that's the way it's supposed to be done. I will agree with you that that's the way it is supposed to be done, but in many places in the country, the number of active hams available to perform emergency functions is not nearly enough. And I'm an emergency coordinator in a county like this, not nearly enough to meet the projected need when a real emergency occurs. This controversy is occurring because of tremendous change that has taken place in amateur radio, particularly since the advent of the no-code license. Let's rewind a bit to a pre-9/11 pre-no-code license time. Back then, an amateur radio license was difficult to get. Amateur radio operators tended to all come in through one door. That is, you were interested in radio, you were interested in technology, you were probably male, and you decided to become a ham radio operator. In an emergency, these ham radio operators would go in, provide assistance wherever it was needed, kind of at an arm's length basis. They weren't members of the groups they were assisting. They were ham radio operators. Drop in, solve the problem. The emergency's over. The ham radio operators go back to do ham radio things until the next emergency occurs. Now, add no code licensing to this. Suddenly, all kinds of people, not just people with great technical interests, can become amateur radio operators. And this includes people who have always admired amateur radio and wanted to be part of us, but couldn't do the code test. Those people include police officers, firefighters, emergency managers, doctors, nurses, all of the kinds of people that are today being swept up in this 97.113A problem. They get their amateur radio licenses. We also enter the post-9/11 era, in which organizations realize they don't have very good communications. They certainly don't have, when all else fails, communications. They realize that the community can be a valuable resource to them. So we have community emergency response teams becoming very popular around the country. Volunteers in emergency communications and in emergency work generally become a big deal. Many of these people see amateur radio as a tool to help serve their community. They can also have fun with it. They can do all the things that ham radio operators do. But the reason they want a ham radio license first today is not because they're interested in radio like we were, not because they're techie people like we still are, but because they want to help their community. And that's a very different kind of a ham than the hams of, say, 40 years ago.
What guidance are you giving at this point to hams who want to be sure they're staying on the legal side of 97.113?
I am not a lawyer, and it's not my license we're talking about, Hap, so let's start with that. I have been in contact with the FCC. They're aware of what I am telling people and haven't objected as they did once before, so I am sort of imagining that this advice is good. Number one, operating as a racist group will not protect you from 97.113A. Some people imagine that once you're a racist something and you're training that you avoid 97.113A. That is not true. If you have any possible business connection to communication, don't do it. Just don't. If you're a firefighter and your city sponsors a CERT group, don't talk about CERT on ham radio. We're still trying to figure out, though, firefighters, if they want to join, say, an Aries net that isn't sponsored by their department, can they do that? I believe they can, but I don't have positive guidance in that direction. The important thing also to remember is there's almost always a way for a local group to get things accomplished that doesn't involve the employees and in a real emergency. And this is the irony of this whole thing. All of this stuff that we talk about being illegally, that is hams who are in the fire department and getting paid and hams who are volunteers with the fire department are volunteers in a fire department emergency communication able to talk to one another. Under 97.113, in a real emergency, they can do that. And that's what makes this so ripe for some sort of a minor change so that we can train for emergencies the way we plan to perform when an actual emergency occurs. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish. I am not trying to open the door for businesses or public service safety agencies or hospitals or anybody to use amateur radio for their routine business communication. If I didn't think we could avoid that, I wouldn't want to propose anything. But I believe that a narrowly crafted exemption can allow the professionals that ham radio operators need to work with to also train with them and be part of the ham radio community on a day-to-day basis, and it won't cause a problem. And the fact that there have been apparently so many violations for such a long period of time and nothing bad seems to have happened, I think makes the point that an exemption is a pretty good idea. You know, the irony that men and women who have sworn the same sort of oaths, Hap, that you and I have, preserve, protect, and defend, and have dedicated their lives to this and are willing, if necessary, to give their life for their community as doctors, police officers, firefighters, emergency managers, volunteer firefighters who get paid on a per-call basis and therefore are employees. The idea that we are taking away amateur radio as a tool from these people when they could be using it in an emergency, it just doesn't make any sense at all. And the fact that the FCC has apparently for a decade or more been unaware of large numbers of violations of 97.113 and somehow amateur radio has survived just fine is, I think, perhaps the best argument in favor of the exemption. That many hams have been acting as though an exemption already was in place in their day-to-day operation. Ham radio is still here. Everything is just fine. The police departments and fire departments haven't taken over amateur radio as a result of this. And I think that is the strongest argument in favor of the FCC granting this exemption when the time comes. If you would like to learn more about what's going on in this area, there are, of course, many sources. Hap, your program is a good one. At some point, the ARRL is going to speak from on high on this subject. I maintain a website at my call sign, N5FDL, November 5, Foxtrot, Delta, Lima, .com, where I offer the current guidance that is what the FCC has led me to believe is acceptable under 97.113A. We are beginning to discuss the precise wording for a proposed exemption. I am answering questions sometimes on the website, more often privately, from organizations that are looking to bring their activities into compliance with 97.113A. So it's sort of a one-stop for figuring out what's going on with this. You can subscribe to the website. You can get email updates, all at N5FDL, November 5, Foxtrot, Delta, Lima.com. And Hap, I really appreciate your help in publicizing this. It just is a bolt out of the blue for me. And I think many other hams and ham organizations that are being told that, oh, by the way, these things you have been doing to serve your community for all these years, you weren't supposed to. It was illegal all that time. And nobody bothered to tell us until You know, all of a sudden it pops up a date and then everything just stops. And it's truly unfortunate this has occurred, and we're going to do what we can to change it.
How about an email address?
n5fdl@arrl.net. But you can contact me through the website, which is in some ways easier.
The thoughts of David Corsi, N5FDL, Emergency Coordinator for San Joaquin County, California. As David stated at the time that this program was posted on therainreport.com on Friday, September 25, 2009, there was no written proposal for the FCC to modify or amend Part 97.113A3 rules governing emergency workers and amateur radio emergency communications. We'll let you know when such a proposal has been formally submitted to the Commission. The Rain Report is a production of the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2009, Rain, and all rights are reserved.